Hello, friends, and welcome back to a very exciting episode of Stuck on Arrakis. Today, I have two very special guests, Steve and Steve from Wheel Takes. Just kidding. It's Allie and Gus from Wheel Takes. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then I'm going to gush about them for a second.
Oh, shucks, Leslie. Hello.
Hi.
I am Gus, and I am one of the two hosts of the podcast that's called Wheel Takes.
I'm Allie. I'm unaffiliated.
Yeah, she's just here for fun.
I'm the other host.
I've read all of Wheel of Time. I'm actually realizing now the most spoiled person here, which is fun.
I'm working on it. I've read about 2.5 books now.
Yeah, and we're a married couple we're not married yet.
Well,
but we're basically
the pandemic
a married couple
had other plans.
In
but
Chicago.
We will be married one day.
And we're very excited to be here with you, Leslie.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is my very first collab, and there's nobody I'd rather have a collab with than you guys.
Oh my God.
Same feeling is mutual.
I've talked about you guys at least once on the podcast, and if you haven't heard Wheel Takes or haven't ever listened to their episodes, it's definitely worth trying out because you guys are hilarious. You make me laugh out loud every time I listen to one of your episodes, and just for the stupidest reasons, which is my favorite reason to laugh at just some dumb shit. So if you guys haven't checked out Wheel Takes, please do. You will not regret it. They are awesome.
We are very excited to be here too.
So we've decided to come together and do a series of collabs, and our first topic is gender in the Wheel of Time. And just as a reminder, Allie is only on book 3. Like she said earlier, she's only read 2.5 books, so we won't be discussing anything past book 3 in this episode. Allie, what's happening where you are in the books right now? Just out of curiosity.
Currently chapter 33, Matt is on a ship.
Oh, Matt ran away, which I have strong feelings about as being a terrible idea, but you know, that's my feeling about everything he does. I'm just like, alarm bells, you dumb, go home. What are you really doing?
Tom's
the
back.
Only reason you survive is because of chance. Oh, Tom's back. Matt nearly got assassinated like 45 times. I think that's where I'm at. And the Wonder Girls are leaving the tower.
To go to Tyr. And Elsie Grinwell's fake. Which was devastating.
I was so bummed. How could they do this to the queen? How could they send her home to her mother? Do they know who she is? I'm so mad. I'm furious.
That's my favorite thing about listening to you guys is for a long time, I was like the one that everyone was listening to my predictions and like my reactions and stuff. And now I get to listen to yours and they're hilarious. And that's an experience that I haven't gotten yet because everybody's been ahead of me the whole time. So it's nice to have. Yeah.
That's the whole reason I wanted to do a podcast with Allie is because I was like, my favorite thing about the Wheel of Time now and yours where you are and will be even more later is not talking about it with people who have read it. It is hearing people who don't know what's going to happen get stuff either super wrong or very right.
Well, yeah. And Gus laughs at me because he says that my passion for true crime is coming into this series because it's like a whodunit. I just believe that the Forsaken are there and I should figure out who they are. He's like, This is not a whodunit, but I've got to know who they are.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess let's get started. Our first topic of conversation is original sin and how that translates into the Wheel of Time. And I'm going to let you guys start.
Sure. You know, people sometimes ask me, what's the Wheel of Time about? Because I recommend it to people I meet on the street at random. And it's hard to sum up, but one of the ways that I talk about Wheel of Time to people is by saying it's a series where women are the only people who can safely do magic and original sin was committed by a man. And Allie, did you go to Catholic school?
No.
Can you
Yes, I did.
Can you elucidate for me what original sin means?
I love talking about OG sin. So here's what happened. All right, once upon a time there was a guy named Adam and a gal named Eve. They were naked in a garden. God created them. They named all the animals. Some of them they named incorrectly. I have strong feelings about it, but I digress. Then Eve one day discovers a snake. The snake goes, hey, you should eat from the fruit, from the tree of knowledge, which God put into the garden and told you not to eat for some reason. Okay.
Because it's fun to fuck with people.
Yeah, because God...
If you play The Sims and you fuck with your Sims heavy.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So I kind of understand.
You play The Sims, Leslie?
Oh, yeah. That's the only reason to play The Sims, right?
Yeah. Right? You got to fuck around.
Who wants to have a happy family in The
You're
Sims?
You're not just a benevolent dictator. You gotta spice stuff up just a smidge. So
it's funny because I actually just started playing The Sims while I edit. So I'll just be listening along. And then whenever I hear something that I need to take out, I'll just come over and like edit it out real quick and then continue. I have to have something to do while I'm editing because it's such a horrible process.
Right?
Just listening to yourself make mistakes.
I know. I'm sorry, I'm sidetracking us from a sidetrack. Oh. I play tabletop simulator solo board games by myself on a computer, which is just a whole lot of levels of I don't fucking know what's happening, but you know what? It's fine. Tabletop simulator, it's on Steam. It's on sale right now, depending on when this goes up. Yeah.
I have it. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Can we play stuff? We should play stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's play Dune.
That's
a good sin.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
Original sin.
Back
Sorry.
To my story of the original sin, which you've probably never heard of it. I'm very hipster when it comes to my Bible stories. But so the snake says you should eat from the tree of knowledge. Eve goes, sounds legit. Goes over, eats from the tree of knowledge. Boo. Bad Eve. Everyone hates you. Then she goes to Adam and goes, Adam, great idea. Eat this apple. And Adam goes, amazing. Love that idea. No consequences thought of at all. Eats the apple. Then they realize that they're naked. Whoopsie daisy. Now they have shame. Thank you so much for that, Adam and Eve.
Is that one of the seven deadly sins? I forget.
Shame?
I did not go to Catholic
school. No, but it is when they, like, discovered shame.
Okay.
And then so, because they had knowledge. So then they put clothes on, and then God came down and was like, boo, I'm angry. I'm not going to kill you, but I am going to kick you out of the garden so that you're miserable forever. Oh, and Eve, because you ate the apple first and forced Adam to sin by just suggesting it was a good idea, now childbirth is going to suck too.
Yeah.
Which is a really great way to explain why our evolution is fucking terrible. because every other animal has a better time at birth than we do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah.
That's because of our ginormous ass heads, yeah.
But then in the wheel, the closest thing they have to a concept of original sin I've always considered is the breaking, right?
Yeah.
So that ingrained conceptual idea for at least for Western culture and for everything that's derived from Judeo-Christian and Islamic culture has that kind of core element at the bottom of, well, women fucked up first.
Yeah.
Therefore, we should hate women. Boo that concept. In the Wheel of Time, what I think Jordan was going for was men fucked up first. Therefore, let's pin everything on men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking about this earlier, too, because if we're talking about original sin, you know, God is involved in there somehow. And I don't know. This is like beyond my knowledge. I don't at this point know what role the creator plays in all of this, like the Wheel of Time creator. But he seems incredibly apathetic to what's happening in the world right now, where Allie is and where I am. And I don't know if that's something that we can really discuss yet, especially since I have no idea.
I think it's completely on the table. I mean, there's been one incidence where the creator has done anything to the point where both of you are, right?
Yeah.
And that's at the end of book one where he just says, don't, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What does he do?
You remember when Rand is about to fuck everything up at Tarwin's Gap?
Oh, yeah.
And he says, it has to end! And then a big voice in the sky goes, it is not here.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in all caps.
Yeah.
People assume that's the creator.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I maybe missed that. Maybe
but that's a great point. That's something I hadn't thought of.
Yeah.
I would argue that perhaps the creator in having Taviren be a thing.
Hmm.
That also might be his way of kind of intervening and showing that he cares at all about the creation.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because they sort of talk about this pattern, which I kind of assume is also sort of a metaphor for, like, the creator's will.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess he just gets really bored and kind of wants to see some cool stuff happen, like a god, like me playing The Sims.
Yeah, and I just think it's interesting that the Dark One, his whole thing is, I'm coming back and I'm going to destroy the world, or the Dragon Reborn is trying to stop me. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like, you know, I feel like if I was in this world living through this, I would be like, God has abandoned us. God doesn't care about us. And, you know, if the fate of this world rides on the back of a channeling man who, and, you know, the original sin was committed by a man, mm-hmm. that just doesn't seem, you know, I don't know, that just doesn't seem right to me. That the fate of the world, yeah. I mean, maybe the point is to, like, you know, make up for your sin or redeem yourself. And we've seen some redemption where Allie is already. But mm-hmm. I just think if I was in this world, I would not think that the creator had any concern for any of us.
I feel like there are times where that's almost commented on by, I mean, Ingtar, I think, says something to the effect of, nothing is going well, right? Because Ingtar, having turned to the dark and then turned back to the light right before dying, I seem to recall some of his rhetoric is like, the shadow is overwhelming and constant, and there is no reprieve, there's no relief. And
I wonder what that feels like.
Ouch.
And to your point,
let's be real.
I agree with your point, though, about possibly a redemption story for, and it feels ridiculous to be saying the concept redemption for men, because that's not it's not a phrase that one would say in the real world, and it's not a concept that makes sense. But
mm-hmm. I mean, sure.
What?
I don't know. No, but I do think about, because I didn't go to Catholic school, I think about the fact that, you know, God sent down Jesus Christ.
Sure.
Because everyone was sinning a bunch, and then goes, well, he's going to take all of that sin and suffering upon himself and die so that mankind can have that redemption story. And he does that whole thing where he says, you know, I'm going to create a mortal child of mine to bear the burden of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder, and, you know, man is the one that's sinning, so I'm going to make them one of you.
Sure.
So I wonder if that's sort of alluding to that a bit.
When we have referred to Rand on our podcast as Satan Jesus, because some people think he's Satan.
I also think
and
he's
kind of
Schrodinger's Jesus.
He's a little bit Schrodinger's Jesus. That's good. Schrodinger's Jesus. If this were one of our podcasts, that would be the title.
Oh, it's definitely going to be the title.
Fan-fucking-tastic. But it's interesting because in the Western canon, that is to say, Christian mythos, etc., the redemption figure is not the diminished class. It's not... Jesus is not female. Jesus is male. And in the world of the wheel, the redemption figure is... And this leads into the question of whether Jordan did a good job of presenting dudes as a diminished class, which he claims was not his intent. And I don't think... We'll get there. But...
His intent was not to present men as a diminished class?
His intent was to present men as a diminished class comparative to the real world. But to have a gender normative, gender equal society. Gender normative means something else, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
I don't think that men are necessarily, like, not to the extent that women are, I don't think that men are necessarily lesser in this world.
Yeah.
I think he did a good job of striking that balance, if that's what he was going, I mean, because I'm sort of joining us for the first time. I think he did a good job striking that balance if his goal was not to have men be lesser in this world than women, because I don't think they are. I think they definitely get a lot of flack for some stuff if they're channelers, but other than that, I think, you know, they're greater in some ways and lesser in others.
I mean, would you say, Leslie, that the bias against men is restricted solely to channelers, or do you see it as reflected in the wider world?
You know what? I was thinking about this a lot when I was putting together my notes for this conversation, and I can't really remember any incident of a non-channeling male really being, discriminated against in any way. I feel like most of the there are some female nobles, but a lot of the nobles are male. A lot of the people in power are male. And I don't ever remember any of them really getting any shit like the male channelers are. So I definitely think that the male channelers are the ones who get the most of that. And maybe there is at some point that I'm not remembering males that have a hard time because they're male, but I really don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it'd be kind of like if our society decided that apple-eating women suck, but every other woman is chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, to be fair, apples are amazing.
Apples are amazing. Let's be honest.
Maybe we did do that, and then it got lost.
Yeah.
Because everyone fucking eats
apples. Yeah, they're like, don't trust a woman who eats an apple. And then all of a sudden, it's like, just you know, a blanket statement, every woman, because we're just not going to watch her the whole time. Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like is I agree 100%, Leslie. I feel like so many of the mayor of Two Rivers is a dude. They have this circle of women that sort of run things and the wisdom and all that stuff, but still the large governing body, it's sort of a checks and balances between the women's group and the men's group.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of interplay with one another and have different concerns, but, you know, I guess the women have kind of veto power.
Well, I mean, what would you say, Leslie? Because my memory of the early books, even though I've just gone through them again, is a little foggy because it's a lot of buildup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with respect to the governance of Two Rivers, if we want to start there, while we're talking about contemporary Wheel of Time, what was the second topic that we put down? Bias in the world or not in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The women's circle versus the city council, I guess. How does that buy into this concept or work against what Jordan says he was going for, which is gender parity?
You know what? And I was thinking about this a lot. I feel like I was trying to figure out, you know, how the two genders work together in this world. And I think a very good example of that is the Two Rivers, where they're in between groups of people, males and females, there's not a lot of collaboration between them.
No.
Most of the collaboration between males and females that we see is individuals like Aes Sedai and warders and things like that. So yes, they both have their own group of ruling or, you know, their own regulatory bodies or whatever.
Yeah.
But they do not collaborate with each other in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
That we see.
Particularly, yeah. I think particularly while we're still on the Two Rivers, it mostly seems like the village council rolls their eyes and complains about the women's circle.
That's how I feel. They're kind of like, they complain about Nynaeve, and they complain about the women's circle.
So much.
And it always felt to me a little like women, am I right?
But yes. Then the thing that I like is that in this world, the women's circle is able to do that and have equivalent power. At least as the dude here, you know, my understanding of it has always been that the women's circle has as much power, which is nice to see because it's not... It wouldn't be that in the real world, at least not in this time period. Not today either, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By the way, I feel like we should mention before we go much further on gender and sex discussion that the gender spectrum is not represented super well in the Wheel of Time. And while we're talking about gender parody and sex parody and whatever, because Jordan was writing when he was writing and did not have today's more progressive viewpoints.
It's very binary.
Yeah, it's super binary. And we might be using the terms sex and gender interchangeably when they're not the same thing.
Yeah.
That's important to note. Yeah. I appreciate that you said that because there's certainly a difference. In this world, a lot of the time, your gender performance is pretty equivalent to what your sex is. So that's largely why we'd be using that interchangeably.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting, too, and I think we'll probably touch on this later, that there is a certain variance in performance of gender.
Yes.
And that starts to come up when Min enters the picture specifically. And I think it'll be interesting to talk. And Bridget, I guess, or Brigitte.
Brigitte.
For those of you who don't know me, I never get any of their names right. That's sort of a point of pride. But Brigitte also, I guess, is sort of someone we should talk about when it comes to that, too. Mm-hmm. What little I know of her so far. But, I think I sort of, when we lights up on the two rivers, saw it as, you know, we have this circle of men and circle of women. Certainly you're correct, Gus, in that in the more white canon, women wouldn't have had this equal level of power. I do think that there are other cultures where there are certainly women's circles and that specifically deal with women's issues.
Yeah.
I think in the traditional view of like what would be like a medieval time period.
Yeah, medieval England, medieval France.
The men pretty much run shit and the women kind of do their best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that the series is refreshing in that women do have more power and they have more positions of, you know, power. I do think, however, if I may change the subject just a little bit.
Please.
The perceptions of men and women are really interesting because the males, especially male channelers, and I think I'm specifically talking about male channeling people, but the perceptions of both of them are interesting because you have male channelers who are persecuted and prosecuted, hunted down and gentled. People are afraid of them and afraid of what they stand for and what they represent. But I don't think female channelers have that much better of a perception. Because if you think about the Aes Sedai, which is basically our only channeling female body where Allie is. If you think about them and you think about the perspective or the perception that people have about Aes Sedai, it's really negative, especially. And I mean, the first book is literally Aes Sedai can't be trusted, even though they can't lie. They'll never tell you exactly what you ask them. They'll really bend the truth to try to get around telling you what you want to know if they don't want you to know. And that's something that bothers me just a little bit because I understand why they have that reputation. But, I mean, like I said, at the beginning of the series, it is hammered into you so hard that the Aes Sedai aren't trusted, aren't liked, aren't welcome in a lot of spaces. And like I said, I kind of understand why because they're not always completely honest. They do things of their own volition without telling you why. But I am a little bit bothered by how negatively this entire group of women is perceived. And I think that really comes in other groups too, especially like we were talking about the women's circle. Like Allie said, everybody's just kind of like, women, which is a very flippant attitude to have about women who have positions of power. And Nynaeve is a little bit of a special case because she's very young for a wisdom. But even the way that she's treated in the town isn't necessarily great. And the first time that Tom sees her, he basically says, oh, you'll make a good wife or you should be in the kitchen or something like that. And from the get-go, I just feel like the perception of women is still kind of wrong if we have an equal society. It's just not quite right.
I would certainly agree with that. I mean, you have very strong feelings about Aes Sedai treatment.
I have incredibly strong feelings about how the Aes Sedai are treated. So part of my, like, anger often toward the boys tends to come from the fact that they are bigoted, in my view, toward the Aes Sedai. Even when their own friends become Aes Sedai, they, you know, basically kind of wash their hands of their friendships in a way.
I mean, what's Matt saying where you are right now?
Basically, that he doesn't trust them. That he doesn't trust women that he's known his entire life.
Yeah, well, maybe I can talk them into coming. Maybe they've sobered up and will come with me now.
Yeah, and I feel that so much of my anger comes from how Moraine is treated. I call her Morgan often. how Moraine is treated because she's done nothing but help them from the get-go. She is, yes, has she gone about it in the right way every time? No. But I think she's allowed a pass considering she's saved their asses time and time again. And time again, they proceed to do nothing but give her shit about being an Aes Sedai and untrustworthy. It drives, as a woman who feels like I've been in spaces that are unfriendly toward me because of who I am, or I've been dismissed or otherwise treated poorly because of who I am, it's a little bit like, it's a little bit grating. And that they sometimes seem to feel like they know more than she does when, I'm sorry, she's like 50 fucking years old and is magic. Like, shut up, sit down and listen to mother, please.
Yeah.
And then, and then More Death, whose name is literally More Death, shows up from the shadows and they're like, he seems legit. Let's go with this guy. Or Lanfear pops up and they go, Aes Sedai. And she goes, no, fuck Aes Sedai. And they go, good enough for me. You seem great. Nice boobs, by the way.
Exactly.
Like, you know, it just, there's just a point where I agree with you, Leslie. Like, to me, I go, man, powerful women can't catch a fucking break. Mm-hmm. No, even in this world. Like,
yeah.
Women who kind of go beyond the expected. And then also, the big conflict in Rand and Egwene's relationship up top is Rand's like, I want to be a simple farmer, and Egwene goes, I want more for my life than that.
I want anything from my life.
Yeah, yeah, I want more from my life than being an exact copy of our parents, please.
Yeah.
And that's their big conflict about whether or not they're compatible right off the top is the woman wants to leave and Rand's like, meh, 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 ambitions.
Yeah. But she doesn't even want to leave. She wants to go to, like, Terran Ferry.
Yeah, she wants to go to the next bumblefuck town. Like, how fucking hard is that for you? Your sheep can't move?
I think...
Like, that just drives you nuts.
I think whenever you're talking about the way Moraine is treated, you really sparked a thought in my head. And that is the relationship between Nynaeve and Moraine at the very beginning. Because,
oh,
yeah, that's a big reason why I didn't like Nynaeve. And you know what that kind of reminds me of is in our society, a lot of women, I don't know, they just kind of dog on other women that are successful. Like, women as a whole, I mean, I'm not trying to generalize, but a lot of women, and this is something that we see a lot, they are intimidated or envious or something whenever they see another woman succeeding. And a lot of times they really try to drag their fellow women down. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening with Nynaeve and Moraine, because Nynaeve is, I don't know if she's jealous or if she doesn't like that this woman is so worldly and knows what she's doing. Or what? And I know a lot of it's like, oh, I don't trust the Aes Sedai or whatever, but it just feels to me like she has a grudge that is completely undeserved against Moraine.
I'm really glad you brought that up. I do talk a little bit on the podcast every now and then, largely as a joke, but there's always a seriousness behind everything I joke about, in that there is a theme on occasion of women tearing down other women.
Yeah.
And we see it all the time in our society now, like you said so eloquently, that women don't like to see other women being successful, that women often tear each other down in lots of different spaces. A lot of the cruelest behavior I've witnessed toward myself has been not from men, but from other women.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that that's true for a lot of people. And the most hostile work environments I've been a part of and the least favorite bosses I've had have unfortunately been women.
Yeah.
And that, I think, comes from a couple things in our society in particular, is that because there are fewer opportunities for women that we perceive, that there are fewer opportunities, when mm-hmm. we witness another woman being successful, we're threatened by that because she took our spot.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my view of that. And then we also view women as competition in terms of their youth, their attractiveness, and what that means for us in terms of our value. Because we're taught from a very young age that our value comes from our appearance and our likability.
Yeah.
And so when another woman infringes on that, it's threatening. And then so we strive to tear her down.
Yeah.
Is what I've found.
And
I find it interesting that there are a lot of instances that I've noticed of women commenting on one another's appearance, especially when it comes to Elsie Grinwell. They listen, Elsie Grinwell's my Beyonce in this book. Like, I understand that I have a weird obsession and fascination with this woman, but I guess it's that she's so unapologetically herself.
She's also the most sex-positive character.
And she's
you've
the
met
most
so
sex-positive character in the book. That I just, like, can't help but root for her. But I, and so I find especially the way that occasionally they will talk about Elsie Grinwell to be rather offensive, to be quite honest. And, like, Egwene called her recently.
Plump
and sort of pretty.
Yeah.
And things like that where I just go, oof, Egwene.
Yeah.
Like, listen, we can't control our thoughts. I've always been of the mentality that your first thought is not you. Your second thought is who you are.
Oh,
so, like, if you think something in your head, that's society telling you to think that. And it's how you follow that up, whether you affirm that thought or go, that's a bad thought. Don't think that.
Mm-hmm.
That's who you are.
Yeah.
Because we can't help that subconscious part of our personality because that's ingrained in us from when we're small. But it's that, like, it's what we do with it that matters.
Mm-hmm.
But I go, woof, Egwene. That was a unkind way of describing a fellow woman. And also, does it matter
mm-hmm.
that she's plump and kind of pretty? Like, let's, or Lanfear also sees Egwene and goes, you're pretty, I guess. You know, it's sort
of this is the same chapter, not to interrupt
and
you.
Granted, Lanfear shit on Matt's appearance as well, and I live for it. That was just partially because I think Matt could be brought down a peg or two.
I wonder sometimes, this is the same chapter and the same part of the book where I wonder whether this is Jordan's male gaze, not your nickname for more gaze, but the actual concept shining through, or if he's trying to make a commentary on society. Because when Egwene meets Lanfear, he spends about half a page chronicling her inner monologue. And it's all of this self-sabotaging comparative stuff where Egwene is looking at Lanfear and metaphorically smoothing her skirts, which is a phrase that you haven't encountered much yet, but is a very, very common phrase later in the books, where she starts thinking, well, wow, she's a lot more attractive than I am, and she seems like she's probably smarter than me, and she seems like she's probably stronger in the One Power than all of us, and then she snaps out of it. And she says, I have never let myself look at another person and consider myself less than them before, and I'm not going to start doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's Lanfear doing Lanfear stuff. But when I read that, it throws me off because it's so unlike when, for instance, Rand meets Agilmar, who is a lord, and the head of Faldara, and he doesn't do any of this. He doesn't think, wow, he's so strong, he's so powerful, he's so cool. Perrin meets Elias Machira, who is the most advanced wolf brother he knows, and Perrin is just learning that he's a wolf brother, and he doesn't think, oh my goodness, I have to learn from this incredibly wise person. But Egwene meets Lanfear, and her immediate reaction is, oh my god, she's so much better than I am. And that rings false to me, but I'm not sure if it's Jordan putting his own biases into the work, or if it's a commentary on societal expectation, what Ali was talking about a second ago, where the first thing you think is what society tells you to think, and the second thing you think is what you actually believe. Because she does go, fuck all that noise.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's some kind of, you know, one power thing.
So, speaking from my own personal experience, I've had those kind of thoughts before when mm-hmm. I've met another woman. Wow, she has such a well-established career. She's so much more successful than I am. And then I snap out of it. And I think a lot of the times, Robert Jordan does kind of write with rose-colored glasses on and doesn't really understand, you know, and there are examples way past where Ali is, so I can't really go into that. But, you know, there are moments where Robert Jordan makes a female character do something that is completely out of the norm for females. Something that we would probably never do to our friends or family. In this case, however, I do think that that's true. Ali, I don't know if you've ever experienced anything like that, but that is definitely something that happens to me. Well, it used to happen to me a lot. Now I don't really give a fuck because I'm just doing my own thing.
Well, I feel like the older we get, the better we are about being secure in ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I certainly, Leslie, I'll call myself out right now. I will meet a woman who's prettier than me and smarter than me and more successful than me. And immediately I'm like, what's your angle? You know, like,
yeah.
And that's an internal, like, immediately you're like on edge.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, and I can't speak for all women, whether or not that's true, but I do think it, you know, let's call ourselves out when mm-hmm. we're like that. Women tear down women all the time.
Yeah.
It's sort of part of it. It's an unfortunate part of it. And I do think it comes from the things that I've sort of listed before. And I think there is an inherent competitiveness on occasion that I find to be rather unpleasant in myself that comes up when I meet other women. And I do think that there is a truth to that to a certain extent, where if I met a woman, as I do frequently, who's balls hot, because listen, women put a lot into their appearance a lot of the time because society tells us we have to, and then we have to, you know, there's this idea that women really, when they're putting attention into their appearance, are really just doing it for other women, because mm-hmm. we're all like in this little competitive thing of like who can be the cutest and the smartest and the nicest all the time. And so, yeah, there is that certain threat element that as I get older and smarter, hopefully, I start to realize in myself is a toxic thing. But definitely, like, especially in like the middle school years, did it suck to be a girl, because you just were the shittiest, not only to your enemies, but to your friends.
Yeah.
You just, I don't know if that's true for you, Leslie. Like, we were all just awful to each other. awful. So, and it just comes from like, suddenly boys are a part of the picture and you want that attention
mm-hmm.
and the other girls are a threat to that. And then also on top of it, like, if you had parents like my parents, you also had to be, you know, the smartest child and the mm-hmm. most capable child and the nicest child.
Yeah.
And so you had to be all of those things all at one time. So it just became like so competitive and unnecessary. But I think that is where that tearing down other women things come from.
Yeah. And I will not get on my whole soapbox about social media, but I could get on a fucking soapbox about social media. But I think that is doing irreparable damage to young girls right now, because they're seeing these Kardashians and I don't know who the fuck else, but that are perfect in every, you know, perfect from the facade that they put up. But it's just making it so much worse, because it's creating a lot of jealousy and envy in these young girls who should be learning to appreciate everybody's body, appreciate how they look and what makes them unique. But they're seeing all of these women on Instagram that all look the same. They have tiny waist, big ass, big tits, big lips. I can't tell one Kardashian from the other. I don't follow the Kardashians, which is probably my problem, but they all just look so weird and unnatural. And they have, I mean, they have the attention of every little girl. Maybe not everyone, but a lot of young girls. And that is, I mean, they Facetune their images, and I just don't know. They're getting surgery every day, it feels like. And I think that's going to cause a lot of mental problems for women. And, you know, I never had that experience growing up. I had MySpace when I was in high school. But, and so I can really separate myself and my self-worth from how those women look compared to me. But young girls cannot. And that is going to create such a rift in their idea of what they should be and what they actually are. And yeah, it's just, God, I hate social media so much for that exact
reason. Yeah, I can get behind that cause.
You talk about, like, the damage it's doing to young girls, and I'm like, hell, the damage it's done to me. Like, how many times have I gone on social media, seen someone's perfectly face-tuned ass and gone, well, I guess I'm just worthless. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how many times has that happened? I mean, and it does. It does.
Can I talk about Flora's Lava? And what comes up sometimes when we're watching Flora's Lava?
Sure.
As a relevant topic?
Sure.
It's everywhere, right? We watch Flora's Lava, which is an amazing show on Netflix.
So stupid.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and everyone should watch it.
So stupid. It's like dumb American Ninja Warrior.
But that comparative thing that's drilled into so many people, women nowadays, comes up, because that we'll watch it and Allie goes, do I look like that person or do I look like that person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
it just comes out of my mouth. Yeah. And then I go, wow, I gotta check myself before I wreck myself. I gotta go make a therapy appointment again about my body dysmorphia. Cool. But I think, and in part, it's interesting because, you know, women are taught so many implicit messages before they're even in school. I mean, it's all just this insidious, weird thing that we're taught where it's like you have to be super nice or you're a bitch. But if you're super nice in a way that, like, gets men's attention, then you're a hoe. And it's like there's no or you're just, like, not sexually desirable, in which case, why the fuck do you exist? You know, and it's like all of these, like, stupid implicit things. Or, like, in school, girls get corrected far more than boys. In terms of their behavior. And so then by the time, and then God forbid you're a girl with a learning disability like I had, you're corrected even more. And then so by the time you are older, you have this idea that you have to be this, like, nice, unobjectionable person in a society that's always looking for reasons to object to you.
Yeah.
Because of the very fact of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes this very fascinating battle where, like, then when a woman is outside of that, when you work so hard to be in this box that is a very careful box that you draw for yourself, it's threatening.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to sort of elevate yourself, it's threatening to watch other women get there before you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this natural sort of comparison that takes place. And I think it's interesting because I know that Robert Jordan had his wife edit a lot of his material. And I wonder how much she was involved. Because, you know, on the one hand, there's this sort of internal dialogue, which I know rings false to you, but sort of rings uncomfortably true for me in a way. And then there's a lot of, like, girls laughing and falling into bed together where I'm like, all of zero times have I ever done that with a girlfriend.
Oh, the giggles. Oh, my God, yeah.
All of zero times.
The scene in I think it's Great Hunt, where Min, Elaine, and Egwene just giggle about Rand, who they all have a crush on, for five pages. I suppose that's actually rings far more false, because it's
honestly the thing that rings the most false to me is the fact that they're all really super chill with all of them having a crush on him at the same time. Like, I go, woof, that would be.
With all due respect to your spoiler level, you have no fucking idea.
Yeah, you have no fucking idea.
I'm sure it gets
no
layered.
Fucking idea.
Maybe this is just me and my weirdness, but Elaine going, my brother's available. I go, never would I ever.
Yeah, when Egwene is crushing on Galad, and Elaine immediately goes, "Why do you have a crush on that brother? You should hook up with this brother."
Yeah,
I do, but I want to go back to Nynaeve and Moraine, because this is what started this whole conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bring it back to Wheel of Time, because we are way on.
What's important? Thanks for clarifying that for me, because you know I continue to try to teach my and learn from people. I'm a work in progress.
It's
myself,
all good.
So thank you.
I think it's really beautiful that you are like, I don't really get it.
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful that you don't have that internal monologue. And I hope one day to not have that weird initial reaction when I meet a very hot lady. But I also then get weirdly obsessed with her to make up for it. So that's like my own weirdness. I do want to bring it back to Nynaeve and Moraine, and I'm curious to hear what you think about this. So, and this is going to bring in some Game of Thrones shit that... I read Benioff and Weiss. I think it was them.
It was a director. I know
it was a director.
With this.
But he talked about Sansa and Daenerys meeting.
This is season 8 spoilers.
And
for
that they were in a room together. And the director said, well, there was this added layer of the fact that they're, you know, and there's like all this political intrigue going on, which ultimately ended up being stupid.
Yeah, or
but
lack thereof, because it's season 8.
Yeah, but, you know, there was some tension between the two of them, and the guy goes, and they're both attractive women, so how does that come into play? And we've talked about, like, how this interaction with attractive women goes, or smart, successful women goes, and that there is a certain tension there, a little bit at first. But to hear it out of a man's mouth felt very like hot women can't like each other. Am I right? It's very like men and women can't be friends and hot women can't be friends. And I'm like, then who the fuck can women be friends with?
Yeah.
Let's be real. Because we all end up being fine eventually, hopefully, if we're not assholes.
Yeah.
You know, but I do wonder to a certain extent how much Lan comes into play, or I guess Lawn, if we're going there.
We're never going there.
In terms of
fucking Lawn.
Fuck that.
Fuck that.
Whether or not Lan comes into play when it comes to Nynaeve's perception of Moraine, and whether or not Robert Jordan puts that into the calculus, as this male director did, about whether or not they're both hot. So I wonder if like that is a thing, and the fact that, you know, Nynaeve from the get-go thinks she's pretty hot shit. I mean, to be fair, it's not unearned. She's a wisdom in her tiny town, which means something to her. Mm-hmm. And then this woman who is very, not arguably, just objectively has accomplished more in her life. Granted, she's older, but she still looks young because she's the ageless Aes Sedai, comes into town and is like, hi, I'm the boss now. How those kind of things
not only does she
affect Nynaeve.
To go further on Nynaeve, if I may.
Yeah.
Nynaeve not only knows she's hot shit and has been told by men for her entire life, well, you're just a little girl. You know? Mm-hmm. Listen to us.
Which, like, is what makes me like Nynaeve.
Yeah.
Because she does not suffer those fucking fools.
And then,
because I know all women, when they heard you're just a little girl, went, Many women. I shouldn't speak for all women. But yeah, Leslie, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on all of that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nuance to the relationship between Nynaeve and Moraine. And really just on Nynaeve's side. I think you're absolutely right about Lan being involved because... I mean, that's a bitter pill to swallow. Falling in love with someone, even though they've just met. Falling in love with someone who spends all of his time protecting another woman and who is bonded to this other woman. I think that's very threatening for her. And I also feel like, you know, we talk a lot about how Nynaeve thinks she's hot shit and she is, you know, very sure of herself and she's very proud of what she's done in her life, but I feel like we don't get enough of her internal dialogue to say with 100% certainty that she doesn't feel really small compared to Moraine, because She can do a lot with her magic at this point, but she really doesn't have the travel that Moraine has, the experience that Moraine has. She doesn't have the station that Moraine has. And if I were Nynaeve and this other woman, and this is absolutely what we've been talking about, and this other woman who is beautiful, powerful, and magically tied to the man that I love, I would hate her too. Not only that, but she's also taking her friends away. And Nynaeve doesn't understand why. She's extremely worried about them. And she gives up that she's built for herself, becoming this very young wisdom and helping her town. She gives that up to go and make sure that her friends are okay. And that's something that I really admire in Nynaeve, even if I think that she's kind of insufferable sometimes. I think she needs to tone it the fuck down most of the time. And as someone who loves Moraine, I have a huge bias against her at the very beginning that really eases up as the series goes on. But yeah, I think absolutely Lan is a part of that. Women against women is a part of that. There's all kinds of stuff going on with her.
Yeah. It's interesting how Robert Jordan, as he kind of strives to create this egalitarian society, still somehow manages to include these like sort of subtle undertones of women being a little bit shady toward other women.
Mm-hmm.
I find that interesting because I go, we don't see that in the boys.
Yeah.
We see it
a little with Matt.
I think the extent
the power stuff
of that we see in the boys is actually just, well, I wish other boy were here. They know how to handle women.
And I was going to bring that up, which I go, that's some praise crap.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not in a threatening way. I wish they could be my wingman kind of way.
Yeah. And it's a shame that we cannot currently talk about male channelers interacting with male channelers, because that hasn't happened at all yet.
Yeah.
No.
But I
feel
like
they keep getting ganked in the field by the Reds.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. The guys don't have that interaction.
No.
Yeah.
And I don't know, because I'm not in a male headspace. I don't know if that's just because you guys don't ever feel that way about other men. I mean, I'm sure like every now and then, you know, maybe you see like a really buff dude or I don't know. Like, does that ever cross your mind?
Not to speak for all men,
as you are the man in the room.
Not to speak for all men, it's not something that comes into play often. And actually, I think the societal projection on male headspace is it only comes to play as it relates to interaction with women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say men are a big factor in how women interact. Like, I definitely think you take men out of the picture.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, it'll alleviate things. But I would also say, like, because there's more limited resources in terms of, like, what we're able to access. And granted, that's getting increasingly less true. But I know when my mom would talk about being a lawyer in the 80s and 90s, like, it was fucking miserable.
Yeah.
Because it was just constant battling for your spot.
Yeah.
And there was like, we have room for one female partner. So then, of course, every other woman's looking at each other going, so which one of us is it going to be?
Yeah.
You know? And it's not like they ever said that out loud.
It's
just
implicit.
What it was.
Yeah, it's because it's like, well, we should have one because we should have one.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel that as a writer, like in writers' rooms now, it's like, we need one POC, so we'll check that box. We need one LGBT, so we'll check that box. And we need one gal.
Yeah.
And then the rest, we can fill it up with as many fucking white men as we want because we've checked our boxes. Look how great we are. We're so progressive. We have these three categories.
Yeah.
Done. Wash our hands of it.
And I should clarify also, with respect to the guy headspace equivalent of that, it does come up sometimes when I'll meet very, very fit people if they are acting like, I know I'm strong.
Oh, so if they're like dicks about it.
If they're dicks about it, right? And I don't know if that's that like alpha pack mentality, whatever, but like a lot of my friends are in much better shape than me, like my friend Daniel, and never crosses my mind except in the almost land fairy sense of, ooh, can you teach me? Let's be friends.
Yeah. Well, I'll say as like an adult woman, it's not like in my friendships, usually I'll like look at them as fellow competition. It's more like that initial sizing up of other women that you
sure.
like have to get over instinctually where you're like, well, here's my mental calculus. Shut up. That's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, stop doing that.
Yeah.
You're an adult.
Yeah.
But I definitely see it, like, affect. I've definitely had relationships where I go, oh, you're being mean to me because you're insecure. Cool. Like, now I understand that. But now I get it. But a lot of the time, it's the most hostile relationships I've had tend to be with other women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which sucks.
Yeah.
All I want to do is be friends.
Yeah. And, you know, to call myself out again, a lot of the times when I see these women who are, you know, a threat, quote unquote, to me, who are more successful or whatever, a lot of the times my first instinct is to think something negative about their appearance. Like, oh, mm-hmm. that color is so not for her. Or, oh, her lipstick looks terrible. Or something like that. And that's something that I'm working on, but it happens a lot. And I don't know why that is. I'm guessing for the reasons that we've been talking about where, you know, we feel inferior to women who are more powerful or more beautiful or more fit than we do. So we got to take them down a notch and point out a flaw that they have. And mm-hmm. like I said, that's something that I'm working on, but it happens like every single time, every single time.
Yeah.
I I don't meet a lot of women. Well, I don't meet a lot of anyone, but I don't meet a lot of women who are, you know, anything above me or whatever. But as soon as I do, that's the first thought that I have. And it's so fucked up. It really
it's
is.
It's really fucked.
Because, you know, after all of the, you know, the discrimination and the problems that women face every day, still, we should be lifting each other up. Absolutely. We should not be tearing each other down. But I don't know. It's like society or something has really fucked us up in that, you know, in that regard.
For sure. I've definitely been complicit in that as well. And I really appreciate you sharing that because it is sort of a what the fuck, like, especially as an adult, when you catch yourself doing that, you're like, that's really messed up of you to think that. And that's why I sort of stick to this idea of like your first thought is society and mm-hmm. what society taught you. And your second thought is what you've learned. Because it's that what the fuck that's really messed up of you to think that
mm-hmm.
that is Leslie or that is Allie. And it's that society teaches us to be feel competitive. That's that, you know, I'm going to tear her down and I'm going to do the thing that I was taught was the most valuable thing about her, which is her appearance. Yeah. And that like a lot of the time we do dress up for other women for that reason, because we want to be impenetrable to this sort of judgment of us based on our appearance. I find that all really fascinating. I took a lot of gender studies classes in college. Can you tell? it's super fascinating how like women interact. And I think it's also interesting that in this I sort of touched on this, that in this egalitarian society, women are still doing that to each other.
Quote unquote.
Quote unquote.
Quote unquote egalitarian society.
And I go, you know, if women are so equal in this world, why are they still displaying similar symptoms of the patriarchy?
That's a phrase we use sometimes instead of patriarchy.
One of the things, if I might change the subject, one of the things that I really want to touch on is what kind of gender stereotypes that translate from our world into the series. And we've kind of talked about this just a little bit with, you know, talking about how women tear other women down. But I feel like there are quite a few stereotypes that are definitely true in our world that translate over into Wheel of Time. For example, go ahead.
No, you go first.
So, for example, like, men are lecherous and nasty sometimes, mm-hmm. or men are stupid and need to be guided by the ear, or they're going to, you know, mess things up. Women are bitchy and difficult. Women use their bodies to get what they want. Those kind of stereotypes that are really pretty harmful mm-hmm. are very much a part of the Wheel of Time. And I guess I just wanted to get kind of your takes on, you know, maybe some other stereotypes and what you think this does for the gender relationships in the series.
I'll add another one on top of that. That the punishment for Aes Sedai is domestic activities. And spanking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And fucking spanking.
I would like to know how Galad and Gowan are punished when they fuck up, because I'm very sure they're not scrubbing pots.
Yeah. They imply in book three it is also by spanking.
I knew that, but I'm sure it's like mucking stables or something like that, or sharpening swords. I'm pretty sure they're not scrubbing pots or making beds, and I'm curious about how those punishments seem rather gendered in a way.
Extremely. Well, and we've only had one scene in the kitchens with Laris, but I don't remember if they identify the sex of most of the workers in the kitchen.
I believe they're all novices.
I think they're all novices and accepted.
So I think they're all women, even though they have servants
who
are male.
They have manservants, but they're carrying stuff.
Yeah.
Which is normative.
The manly thing to help with.
Yeah.
In the kitchen.
Yeah.
I find all of those things super interesting. Nynaeve certainly, and the Aes Sedai in general with their excessive sniffing, all have this, like, bitchiness quality that I find to be troubling at times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and to add on top of that, it's always good to have a man around it with a sword.
Yeah.
Women can use swords.
Yeah.
Just as doesn't have to be specific to men. But Elaine leans into it hardcore, although I think she's just covering for having a crush on Rand. Nynaeve even leans into it a little bit. She subverts it a little bit when she says, "Hurin would be handy to have, but also I could just blow anybody up who got close to us."
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then we think about the architecture and the structure of most of the military or guard organizations we've had or seen
are all men.
It's mostly men.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, Gareth Bryn is who you think is a Shamael, or some Forsaken, is a dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and the fact that, most of the Forsaken are dudes.
The ones you've met or heard about.
Well, how many do I know? Six?
You know six or seven of the 13.
So unless, like, many of the ones that I don't know about are women.
Many. I'll just tell you.
Don't tell me. Don't tell me. Don't tell me anything. But,
you currently know one.
White Cloaks are all dudes from what we've seen. Mm-hmm. I haven't met a lady White Cloak yet. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that. And when they had the big thing of heroes, when Matt tooted the horn,
mm-hmm.
Brigitta was the only woman whose name we learned, and they said men, and some women too, were there.
Men.
Yeah. And they and one of the guys said, we're the best men or whatever, with the heroic men, and then Brigitta made a point of saying,
and women. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they even forgot about the women that were there, mm-hmm. or just sort of used men as a catch-all. And I think, it was meant as a cute moment, but I also thought it was, like...
It's telling.
It's telling that the best heroes of their all time are men. I'm like, women did the original sin in our world, and so we're lesser, but even the men fuck up and they're still the heroes. Like, it's like, and the heroic, powerful women are largely shit on.
Mm-hmm.
It is worth, from a purely lore perspective, it's worth mentioning that Jordan independently confirmed at a Q&A that there is a, for lack of a better term, lady dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets spun out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really dope.
Which I think is nice, but also, like, could have been mentioned in the series.
Yeah.
Could have been mentioned in the series. Could have been a lady.
Could have appeared in the series at some point. Could have been a lady, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, like, as I was going through the writing program that I went through, I had a meeting with a teacher that changed my life where he said, you know, I was like, yeah, it's about a guy. And he goes, why not a woman? And I went, it just feels like it should be a guy. And he goes, anytime it feels like it should be a guy, make it a woman. It'll be more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
And, yeah. And it changed my whole life. So every time now I'm writing a story, I go, what if I wrote them like they were a dude, but I made them something else?
Yeah.
What if I wrote them like they were white, but they weren't? Or what if I wrote them like they were straight, but they weren't?
They weren't.
And like, it's just, it always makes it so much more interesting and dynamic because truly, there really isn't a difference in their voices truly underneath it all. And when you kind of get into the finer points of it, it's like all of those, like, it feels like it should be this, are just based on your stereotypes of, like, what people are.
When I was in that same writing, we went to school together, and when I was in that same writing program, I eventually got in the habit of essentially flipping a coin, for which is very heteronormative and cis normative of me, but I got in the habit of pretty much flipping a coin for assigning sex to characters.
At this point, maybe it should be like a D6.
Yeah.
Just flip a D6. And you're like, cool,
get
cool, cool.
And everything.
Yeah, because it's just like you're going to go to what you're biased to write. And how much more interesting is it to make a different choice than the initial gut society reaction?
Yeah.
It's your society reaction and then your you reaction. Like, who could this person be? Who could the hero be? If it's not a straight white dude,
I would love to go back, if we may, to military architecture or that whole defender architecture, particularly where Allie's at in the series. It's very, very pronounced, heavily towards men being fighters and women not so much.
Can I uplift one thing though?
Anytime.
We do have the battle Aja.
We have the fucking battle Aja.
Excuse me, sorry. And I've only seen them in glimpses so far, but we have the Aiel women.
Yes.
So I'm very psyched about these spear ladies.
That's why I'm explicitly saying where you are right now, it is incredibly one-sided.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm assuming, you know, we've started to get glimpses of other cultures where women are really, you know, Two Rivers was largely pretty heteronormative.
And 1950s gender roles, more or less.
More or less. Like, women kind of had their sphere, and men sort of had their sphere. It's sort of the oikos and whatever the other one was in Greek mythology. Like, women had the home, and that's where they ruled, and men had the political sphere.
Is that where the yogurt name comes from?
Oikos is home.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
In Greek.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't remember what the boy version was called. But yeah, that is where the yogurt probably gets its name from.
Right. It's great yogurt.
I'm sure it is. And they, but as we started to, you know, branch outwards, we see Andor.
Yeah.
Because Kyrian is largely man, also men rule.
Yeah,
women sort of
fucking
try to fuck people.
Which we can talk about that later.
Let's talk about the real Housewives of Kyrian.
That's
and then, because I have my feelings, but also I'm like, I mean, it's a little LA.
I'm totally here for Kyrian being Los Angeles.
Yeah, to me, Kyrian is very Los Angeles in different ways. It's a lot of like bored housewives with a lot of plastic surgery trying to figure out, you know, trying to find their next pool boy.
Can I really quick parallel off that to Dune?
Sure.
Which you haven't read, but I know you have.
Yeah.
There's a scene in, I think it's the first one, where there's a party and there's a Bene Gesserit and her husband and Fid Rautha is there. And while we're on the Real Housewives of Kyrian scene, which is what I guess we're calling it.
Yeah.
Do you know the scene I'm talking about, Leslie?
In
Dune? That scene feels very, very much like this scene almost could have been paralleled after it.
Oh, yeah.
Because can you do a better job of, because I've read Dune once, of explaining that scene?
So I can't remember it as well as I probably should. But there are a lot of instances, and I'll speak on the Robert Jordan, Frank Herbert thing in just a second, but there are a lot of instances of, I mean, Dune is really a political series. It's a lot, mm-hmm. and a philosophical, and a lot of that happens, and there's a lot of nastiness between these groups, and especially the women, especially the Bene Gesserit, and anyone that's outside of the Bene Gesserit. So I agree with what you're saying, and I think that Robert Jordan really took a lot from Dune. I mean,
yeah,
Fremen and Aiel aside,
are the same. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. They're basically the same. I actually like Aiel more, but
I do too.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're a lot more fleshed out. But yeah, yeah. That's definitely something that Robert Jordan picked up from Dune. And I think that, you know, like I said, Dune has a lot of really important philosophy discussions. What is the word? Philosophical.
Philosophical.
Yes, thank you.
It's
a lot of philosophical conversations. And that's why a lot of people are kind of turned off by the series. But I think it's really important to read it, especially in the society that we're in now, because, I love politics in a series. And I feel like the politics in the Wheel of Time definitely isn't as fleshed out as it could be. Like,
certainly not.
I don't know. Allie, do you know the Game of Houses yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Dice de Mar.
Dice de Mar. Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
So I think that's a really intriguing concept, and it really closely matches the kind of political backstabbing and plotting that we see in Dune, but it's just not nearly as fleshed out as I would like it to be. Like, I feel like, the characters that we know that can really navigate this space, and I'm trying to avoid what might be a spoiler here, but I think anybody listening, like, okay, I don't want to say anything, because if I'm wrong...
Here, do you want me to take my headphones off?
I was going to take her headphone out. Go ahead.
Does she know about Tom's role in the Game of Houses? Like, has he done anything?
He left Kyrian.
Okay.
And
okay.
Did a thing.
Okay, okay, yeah, so...
And she knows that he's very adept.
With the Game of Houses?
Are we talking about Tom?
We're talking about Tom, yeah.
Okay, okay,
she,
okay.
She knows... Yeah, she knows that he was hooking up with Morghese.
Mm-hmm.
She knows that she has... guessed that he and Elida had a massive falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, yeah.
She knows that he's really good at the Game of Houses.
Okay, okay, yeah. So, really, the examples of the Game of Houses and Tom's involvement are really not explored very in-depth. Like, I've seen him write letters, I've heard him go to meetings with people, but what happens behind the scenes in the Game of Houses is the stuff that I really want to know about. Because, I want to know what Tom's up to. I want to know whose strings he's pulling and what kind of notes he's sending and stuff like that. And even where I am in the series, he throws out references to the Game of Houses and I kind of see it in play. But it's just not as... I mean, it's just kind of disappointing. It just falls flat. There's not a whole lot to it.
That's actually a major part of why I gave up on the Wheel of Time on my first go-through.
Wow, okay.
Was in book six, part of it was because book six, this is incredibly vague as a spoiler, and I don't think it gives anything away. Book six is the let's move armies around for an entire book, which I got really fucking bored of.
Yeah.
But another part of it is... from book two through book six, whenever we're with one of the boys, because by and large, the Wonder Girls don't really interact with nobility that much in books one through three. But whenever the boys are with...
Well, except for Elaine.
Yeah, but she doesn't really count.
Yeah.
You know?
Or Gowan and Gowlet, I guess.
Yeah, but I feel like... because they're kids.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes.
Sure.
Or they act younger than they are, at least, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know Galad is 30, there's 28, which
blows like, my fucking mind. He's older than us.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind every time I hear it. Because he feels like he's 20. But anyway, one of the major things that made me give up my first time through it is because every single lord and lady who interacts with Rand or Matt or Perrin in the early books is just like powdering their nose, sniffing, and being an asshole to poor people. And that's it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, there's no depth here. None of these characters is distinct. I can't tell a Tyran lord apart from a Kyrianan lord apart from an Andoran lord, except for their hairstyle or their boots.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, I think that was intentional. Because we are mostly seeing it from the perspective of farm boys who don't give a shit. But...
Or who don't know to give a shit.
Or who don't know to care, yeah.
Yeah.
But I completely agree with you that some time spent with Tom really diving into Dias de Mar would be nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's a lot to look into with male versus female roles in Dias de Mar.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Well, because from what we understand, a little bit from what I've seen, is the women's role is to fuck their way to the top.
Yeah.
Or fuck their way to information.
Yeah.
Which
is so problematic.
Yes.
It's, yeah. I mean,
there are other, I will tell you this, there are other Kyrianan women that we will meet later who are not in that position.
Sure. This is what I'm going on from a
books
two and a half
three.
Books.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not like it's not a thing, you know, like, it's not like it's not a thing that women do that.
But why, but if this is a gender or a sex equal society, why are men not also doing that?
Well, that's the question.
And why do the women not have the power?
Yeah.
That whereby men can do that.
At the point I'm at right now, I still don't give a flying fuck about nobles. They are still just as one-dimensional, and I don't think this is a spoiler, one-dimensional and male-heavy as they are where you guys are out at right now. I can't remember them from the next one at all. There's, like, a couple of nobles that I like that you haven't met yet, but for the most part, they're like wet cardboard to me.
Does one of their names end with an N?
No, it ends with an E.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's a question for Allie and Gus, of course. Knowing what Kyrian women are like and the kind of environment that they're raised in and this game of houses that they're taught to play from an early age, what do you think about... Moraine is Kyrianan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was hoping you'd ask about that.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about how she acts and the kind of person that she's become, knowing that she comes from such a, you know, such a background?
Well, I find her interesting in that she's so blunt. You'd think that somebody raised in this very be careful what you say environment would be careful what she says sometimes. But sometimes she really...
You know...
But then I wonder if she ascribes to the theory of it's better to just say what you mean.
She's blunt, but, and I love this interaction on a reread, if you look at the first time she and Tom talk to each other.
Oh.
Which Allie is going to now talk about how she thinks there's a ton of sexual tension between Moraine and Tom.
It's so clear to me that there is, though.
And how Dina looks exactly like Moraine.
I ship it. Though I guess mayonnaise does not look like Moraine.
Mayonnaise, that is another one of Allie's nicknames for Morgays, for those of you who are not listeners of our podcast. She calls her mayonnaise.
Yeah.
And sometimes we call her aioli if she's feeling particularly
spicy.
Energetic. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we call Elaine butter because of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Because she's the child of mayonnaise.
If you look at the first interaction between Moraine and Tom, Tom takes one look at Moraine.
And likes what he sees.
And immediately knows who and what she is.
Mm-hmm.
And he bows to her very deeply and refers to her as a lady. Now, I think she's wearing Kyrianan clothing at this point.
Maybe.
I believe there might be slashes or sashes or something on her outfit. Someone will correct me if I am wrong, I hope.
So she's dressing in a power move.
But whatever she is dressed as, it is clear that whatever she is not a lady.
Yeah.
And Tom knows that. Yeah. She is something very different from a lady.
Mm-hmm.
She takes one look at him, because he bows to her and goes, "Lady, I am honored by your presence." And she takes one look at him, immediately knows who he is, because as Allie is beginning to learn, Tom is kind of a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
In different places of the world.
Yeah.
And she calls him Master Bard, which is a rank much higher than Gleeman.
Mm-hmm.
Which he used to have.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
No longer has. And yeah. That is a moment that on your first read, for me at least, I paid no attention to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't give any weight to. I didn't pay it. I was like, okay, whatever. These people are clearly care, you know, for there's something here that I'm not picking up and I don't know what it is and I don't care what it is. But on a reread, you go, these two people are, honestly, this is probably the best Dice Daymar depth interaction that we get, because you go, these two people know what's going on and know where the fuck they are and who the fuck they are, and both of them are saying to the other, I'm not going to give you away if you don't give me away.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so hot.
It's pretty hot. But then conversely, as Allie pointed out, you have her interactions with the boys where she just goes, hey, if you fuck around, you'll find out. And that's bad.
I mean,
yeah.
But I guess she was like, I should keep it simple for these farm boys so that they don't doubt me.
Mm-hmm.
So that they know what I'm about.
Mm-hmm. Have you read New Spring?
I have not.
You have not? Okay, no. Then I will not bring up anything related to New Spring.
Yeah. But I find Moraine interesting in that regard, that she comes from this Kyrianan stock. Because, you know, I'm assuming that not all Kyrianan women are, you know, looking for their next pool boy. But, you know, I think it's interesting that Moraine has been schooled in this environment where she's raised to be careful and thoughtful about what she says.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we do see moments of that. We also see moments where she tries to be funny and totally fucks up.
Totally bombs.
She's not funny.
Well, I suppose, Leslie, do you think there's any interplay between Kyrianan sleight of tongue, for lack of a horrible term, my God, for lack of a better term, and the Aes Sedai, the truth is not always what you think it is?
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the next point I was going to bring up. But before, let me talk about that just a little bit, and then I have a question for Allie.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think all Aes Sedai are really good at that, but man, Moraine is a fucking pro at doing that. I feel like she says a lot in the first, you know, book when we first meet her, but she also says nothing at all at the same time, you know? There's no substance behind what she's saying. And she's so incredibly vague that the boys go, and Egwene, obviously, go off with her. And I don't really think that they know why, because she's so incredibly vague about it. And I don't even remember. She says that she's looking for the Dragon Reborn, right?
Oh, man.
No, I don't think she does. I think that she says...
Not in Lemon's Field.
Yeah, yeah. She says something like, you know, just the Trollocs were targeting boys your age or something like that.
Yeah, she says, look at where they attacked, look at the random pattern of houses, and look at yours.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for you. I can't say why, which is not a lie, but... you have to come with me. Because I think if she explicitly said Dragon Reborn, that's, like, in their minds, I think it's still Satan at that point rather than Jesus.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Which, not to tie everything to Christianity, there's obviously way more in the background of Wheel of Time than just Judeo-Christian mythology.
Mm-hmm.
But because I like saying Satan Jesus.
But, you know, like, we obviously come from a Judeo-Christian
Yeah.
Background.
Yeah.
Not me, but you do. Obviously, I never went to Catholic school.
Yeah, you never went to Catholic school.
Anything
you don't know
like
what
that.
A church is.
Nothing like that. But I definitely think that, yeah, she's quite the circumlocutor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Tom thinks she's the circumlocutor. Boom. Done. Brought it back.
That was
but
good.
Yeah, I think she has this, she's that this kind of thing would come naturally to her because it's what she knows.
Yeah.
Of course, it makes the boys instantly suspicious of her.
Mm-hmm.
But which I have feelings about, as we've kind of touched on, because she's done nothing. Because I kind of go, well, don't look at her words, look at her actions. She saved your ass like 600 times. Can you just give her a fucking break? But you know, I definitely think that her upbringing comes into play. And I wonder if Rand's, because does Rand know that she's from Kyrian?
No. Mm-hmm. We don't know that she... I refrained from mentioning that she's Kyrian until book 3, I think, because they don't... It is never brought up. Because
I was just wondering if his distaste for Kyrian would play a role in his interactions with her going forward.
Oh. Well, I don't think he currently knows she's from Kyrian.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember when he finds that out, or really if he... Well, he definitely does.
Yeah,
he does.
Can we talk about... Speaking of queens, can we talk about Andor just a smidge?
Yeah.
Did you have other things you wanted to say about
Moraine
and Kyrian before we jump topics to Andor? Because I'd love to talk about Andor.
So Andor's really the first time we see anything resembling a matriarchy in the books that I can think of. Am I right about that? I think
yes.
So.
Well, we go two rivers... Village, 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 village. Caemlyn.
Right. So we're in Caemlyn. And...
Oh, Allie lost her earpiece.
I can't keep these damn things in to save my stupid life. Okay. So we see... We meet Egwene and we meet Gawain. And we find...
Elaine.
God damn it.
It's okay. Not fair.
We meet Elaine and we meet Gawain. And... We learned that when Elaine was born, that Gawain had to swear an oath at her cradle as a 2-year-old, which I enjoyed in our most recent recording, doing an impression of him trying to say that damn speech. But that the brother has a title that is to protect his sister, who will be queen. Theoretically, one
first
day.
First prince of the sword.
The first prince of the sword. But then that we later learn that the queen of Andor's job, if they are in battle and they are losing, is to ride out into the middle of the battle so that the men will go rescue her and keep fighting.
That's loaded.
It's loaded.
It's. I should, for the sake of full transparency, it's not her only job.
No,
she sometimes is a competent commander, but she is often put in that position where she plays a damsel in distress.
Yeah.
It kind of goes back to that men as protectors thing we were talking about earlier, that it sort of plays on their impulse, their patriarchal impulse to protect a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot you could talk about with men wanting to protect women that we can't talk about right now, Leslie.
That will be for a later podcast.
Yeah.
But I think it's super interesting that from the time the daughter heir is born, her brother is expected to serve as the protector over her, even though he himself is an infant and theoretically quite incapable of doing so. Like, like comically, in a sad way, you're like, imagine somebody coming in to assassinate Elaine and fucking Gawain rolls in as a 2-year-old, like, not today, motherfucker. Like, that's not gonna happen. So, like, hilariously, like, it's all very symbolic of, you know, sort of a greater responsibility that the male in her family has over her, which I find to be rather interesting.
Yeah.
And then I think it's also interesting that we roll up to Camelin. I'm like, ah, finally, a queen. And everyone's like, we hate her.
Yeah.
Well, half the city hates her.
Well, that's more than anywhere else we've seen.
And they hate her because she has a lady friend who's powerful.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I find all of that to be quite interesting. And that they basically send their children away to be educated by these powerful women and warders and such, which I also find really interesting. There's a lot to unpack when it comes to Andor customs. Because on the one hand, matriarchy, cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're like, oh, also, it doesn't fully escape those, like, patriarchal ideas of protecting women, women being hated when they're in power, all of that stuff. So I'm curious to ask what you guys think of that stuff. Oh, and I just wanted to say as an aside, this is no shade at Robert Jordan. Like, it's an interesting breakdown.
Yeah. He was writing. Because
he definitely did, like, listen, let's look at Tolkien's women. Like, what could we even say? Like, so, you know.
In The Lord of the Rings, yeah.
So the fact that we're having this discussion at all, I'm like, props, Robert.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, is we should mention the man was writing in the early 90s, late 80s, and very early 2000s. And, I mean, consuming media, going back and watching media from even, like, 2006 and seeing the way women are portrayed and the casual sexism, the casual racism, and the casual homophobia that exists there.
Woof.
Holy fuck. Like, we watched all of Monk in quarantine. Great show. Love it. Every single person of color, except for, like, two, has a very strong accent in Monk.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
All
of the black people have accents.
One.
All of the Asian people are, like, like, laundresses who have accents. It's really like, wow, this is something that people were just okay with in 2007.
Watching it now, I went, I will pay them $100 if they could just have a black person on screen that isn't speaking like, you know,
like they're an airplane.
Like they're an airplane. Yeah, it's just one. Like, and it's something that just became, like, now just felt so blatant.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to...
Which, to your point, Robert Jordan, in his attempts to make a society that was critically analyzing or pushing these issues for the time he was writing...
Yeah. And in all due respect, fantasy has not always been a leader in its portrayal and treatment of women.
Well, someday, when we circle around and talk about Jemison... there will be more fun good
apparently
stuff
I've signed
about.
Up for further podcasts, but all due respect, the fantasy genre
as someone who loves
the
fantasy,
most forward
it's
thinking
old white dudes club.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a bit of an old white dudes club.
It absolutely is.
I give my props to Robert Jordan, really, for how much he did do. I just wanted to make that clear, but you know, it's definitely interesting to break down in this modern perspective. Like, there's so much more he could have done, but, like, how much we as a society weren't ready for more. You know, like, we looked at this as egalitarian, where we can go, like, well, it wasn't really an egalitarian look at society, because there's just still so much, like, 80s, 90s, early 2000s crap that's still there.
It's just part of
2020, like, there's so much crap.
We have a long way to go.
But I just think it's interesting to talk about now.
When we're talking about, you can cut this, but later when we talk about, I forgot the queer representation. The first, can I tell you when the first openly gay male character shows up?
Absolutely. Please do.
A Memory of Light.
Oh,
the
my
last
God.
Book. Sanderson, someone pointed out to Sanderson, there's no gay dudes.
Yeah.
And then Sanderson writes in a character who, like, they mention offhand, oh yeah, he likes dudes. And then it never comes up again. And it's not like a thing, it's just like, well, do you think he likes this Aes Sedai? And they go, no, he prefers men. And so what Sanderson does in that moment is he says, hey guys, this is a world that doesn't give a fuck whether you're gay or straight. But at the same time, there's no representation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, not ideal.
That's something that I talk about at length in, I think it was a Crown of Swords episode that I did. Just kind of how disappointed I am with the gay representation in the series. And obviously, we really can't get into that right now because I have lots of very spoilery things to say.
But we will.
And, you know, Robert Jordan was progressive in his own ways. He really was. It does leave a lot to be desired with women and gay representation. I would say that in terms of racial diversity, Robert Jordan is great. I think there's a lot of different skin tones and different cultures. I think that his culture building is one of my favorite things about the series, if not my favorite thing. We talked about the Fremen earlier in the Aiel, and the reason why I like the Aiel so much more is that Jordan makes them seem like a culture that I could go visit if I jumped on a plane, really. And really, all of his cultures are like that. But I think that, you know, he was really progressive, and he fails quite badly sometimes. And I think that it's great to have these conversations where we can criticize the way he thought and the way that he wrote certain things. But it's coming from a place of appreciation for the series because...
Dissect your faves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So...
Just because you criticize something does not mean you're bashing it.
Yeah.
It's like so many people get very up in arms about, you know, their things they love being untouchable. And I think we can always, like, examine, you know, how far we've come in a piece of art. Like, that's allowed, and I think that's what keeps the art going. I think that's important to kind of critique it. Back to Andor.
Right, Andor. This is what we do, Leslie. This is what you don't hear on our podcast.
Is us like
we spend like half an hour like, yeah, I agree with you, and then I cut all of it.
No, you don't cut.
I love it. Yeah, no, I love it. These are the kind of conversations that I don't get to have outside of, like, just chatting in Discord because I am by myself, and it's just kind of me talking about what I think, and I don't get any other perspectives, and I don't get a chance to just shoot the shit with anyone, which is why I was very excited to do this. Speaking of which, I think it would be fantastic if our next collab, maybe even before Gender Part 2, is talking about the controversy surrounding the casting of the show.
Because, fuck yeah. Oh my God,
yeah. Yeah, I think that would be a great conversation, and I think all three of us have a lot to say about that. So I would really love to do that, and that's something that we can discuss at length, even where Allie is in the books.
Can we talk about how fucking awesome it is that Swan's black?
Oh my God. Oh,
I mean, she's
mixed
race, but, like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm so pleased.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, okay. And honestly, I got into kind of a Twitter boxing match, which I really don't like to do. And I feel like I let myself get pulled into that. But there's so much conversation about race right now that I can't stay quiet when somebody's being a fucking racist.
Absolutely.
And the controversy surrounding her character is that Swan in the books has blue eyes and fair skin. And people are upset that, you know, they're casting somebody that does not look anything like the Swan from the books.
Oh, my God.
In her role. Exactly.
It's another turning.
Exactly.
Who cares?
Exactly.
It's another turning.
And the guy that I was arguing with said... I literally cannot believe this thought formed in anybody's mind, but he said, I have pale skin, brown hair, and blue eyes, and I want to be represented in this show. And my response to that was, think about all of the people of color who see zero representation of themselves, see absolutely no one like them in fantasy, which is such a white male dominated genre. What about them? Don't you think they would like to see a little bit of representation too, you
Any
fuck? Yeah.
Apart from being the fucking Easterlings in Lord of the Rings. Yes. Or the bad guys.
I go, we're literally talking about genres where there are dragons and magic and we can't imagine a like protagonist that's black. Like, come fucking on.
I know.
Come fucking on. It drives, or a protagonist that's a fucking woman who gives a shit. Like, I don't give a fuck. It's like, is she a good actress? Great. Yes. I don't give a shit. Like, I don't know. I get so on my, like, on my feelings about, like, everything, because I have opinions about everything. But I truly, like, think that if you cast a person of color in a white role, fucking great. Thank you for doing that. Because I'm like, I know it affected me a lot growing up and not seeing a lot of, like, fucking women who were heroes on screen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't fucking imagine what it must be like to be a woman of color not seeing themselves represented as heroes on screen. That sucks.
Well,
it's
dumb
and it sucks.
Like, I will confess, I had always envisioned Perrin in my head as white, and then I looked at Marcus Rutherford and I went, oh, yeah, no, absolutely, that's Perrin. That is 1,000%. Perrin.
Yes.
That's my favorite casting so far. That guy, I'm so excited to see his
Perrin. Yes. I also love their casting for Loyal, who has a very special place in my heart. He's one of my favorite characters, and if I was going to hang out with anybody from Wheel of Time, it would be Loyal, and Brigitte being a very close second.
I'm excited to learn more about her, but I constantly talk about how if anything happens to Loyal, I'll burn the books in the backyard, even though we don't have
absolutely.
One. I'll find a backyard to burn them in. So,
That's, you know. Them's fighting words. If you do anything to Loyal,
Yeah, I think it's a litmus test of shittiness. You can just kind of be like, okay, are you shitty to Loyal? Yes. Fuck you.
But
yes, I do think we should talk about the casting. I think I have kind of summed up my feelings about it in that I'm like, hey, if you have a problem with it, you can go fuck yourself. Is my personal feeling. But, you know, maybe that's, is that Loyal?
That's Loyal.
Oh my God. It's so perfect. I can't stand it.
I know.
But
I know.
Yeah. I just get mad.
I think, you know, just beyond the casting of the show, I would really like to dive into just how, you know, people of color, especially blacks, are treated and, well, really just treated in the fantasy and sci-fi genre. And, you know, we can talk about N.K. Jemisin all day long, but, you know, from what I've read and what she said, it was very difficult for her to get to where she is in the sci-fi fantasy genre. Like, the whole scandal with the Hugos and just not being taken seriously, it's just horrifying. And I have a lot to say about that.
Well,
so
yeah.
I would love to talk to you guys about that.
The fact that N.K. Jemisin is, like, the black fantasy author.
Yes.
When we have how many hundreds of white?
Well, it's like how Octavia Butler's the black sci-fi writer.
Yes, absolutely.
It's like we get one. Like it's,
and Ursula K. Le Guin is like the, well, I guess.
And here we are. Yeah. We're checking our box. We've got boxes to check.
There's
our
quota.
Because then you can't be like, well, it's racist. Because they're like, well, Octavia Butler exists. Let me stick my glasses even farther up my nose. Yeah, that's how I have been viewing this world now, is that it's like, now that we're aware of it, we're trying to solve the problem in an actually, like, just as terrible way, in that we're like, let's check a couple boxes and then all right, everybody, now that we've, like, done our PR move, because it's not genuine, now that we've done our PR move and made sure we had, like, a woman in the room and a person of color, and then those people are in the room and somebody says something that, you know, is problematic, and
what are you gonna do?
The expectation is, because you're not allowed in a writer's room to say anything like that shoots down an idea without having something to back it up as another idea. So it puts the pressure on them to not only have something in their arsenal to back it up when something's problematic, but they might also be the only person vocalizing that feeling.
And probably won't want to,
and it takes so much time to fucking get in that room in the first place that, like,
90%
of the time
you
don't want to, you don't want to make waves. So it's fascinating. Anyway, I have so many feelings about it.
In a very,
I applaud Rafe Judkins for being inclusive.
Yeah, I fucking love that dude. Did you know he was on Survivor?
Yeah, I haven't seen any of his episodes of Survivor, but yeah.
It's in my favorite show.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
We both blog about it.
We blog about it.
Oh, I got to see your blog. Please send me a link to that.
Okay.
Go ahead, Leslie.
Do you guys mind if we wrap this up?
That's fine.
Soon-ish. It's 11 here, and I got literally no sleep last night.
No problem. This will be our part one. We'll do a part two soon.
Yeah.
So let's wrap up Andor, I guess.
I have a point to make about Andor and the Sonchan.
The Sonchan?
Sort of connect. So I think it's really interesting that we get introduced to these societies where they're run largely by women. There are women in charge. And in Andor, we have... And granted, Kyrian, they've got a guy in charge. Everybody thinks he's a fucking idiot. So, take this for what it is. Maybe all the nobles just suck, and it's sort of a Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Head on spikes eventually. We have Andor, wherein the queen is very controversial because of her relationship with other powerful women. And then we have the Sonchan, who are the villains of the book series so far.
To
my knowledge.
To your knowledge.
I find it interesting. And what we know...
And they're slavers.
They're slavers
who
actively oppress other women. They're colonizers. Oh, yeah. And they... let's talk about tearing down other women. Let's talk about the Sonchan. Holy shit.
Yes.
And the only thing I know about the queen or whatever is that Empress... is that she likes pitting the nobles against each other, trying to get them to kill each other, and that she actively likes to take her slave women and torture them, basically, by putting their
men
on the leash.
Yeah.
And seeing if they both die.
And this is... to speak on that point, this is why Robert Jordan's quote that the world isn't matriarchal, it's equal opportunity. And I think that is fucking not true at all. Mm-hmm. Because if you can say that a society is great or a culture is great unless you are a blank, and in the case of the Sonchan, I won't get into a lot of details because it's major spoilers, but there are a lot of actually good things about the Sonchan that they, values that they have that a lot of the other cultures do not have. However... if you are a channeling woman in their society, you are not equal, you are not free. And if you can say that about a culture, then it's not equal. And the fact that the Sonchan are really the most gender equal society, and I absolutely agree with whoever put that in our notes. I think they are so far that Allie has met. But the fact that they're the most gender equal, and there's an entire group of women that is treated in such a horrible and cruel manner. That's not equality. It's just not. It's just not.
Yeah, it's that idea that none of us are free if there are any of us who are not.
Yeah. Especially not when there's literal fucking slavery.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I just go, I don't think there was, a woman... I don't think there was a person that wasn't sort of affected in some way by the way that Egwene and the other women were treated by the Sonchan.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't think you can not be affected in some way by, the violence of the way that Egwene was treated.
Yeah, we make jokes on our podcast about, Egwene wants to blow everything up now, but, she should, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, and I go, this is a time where we don't have therapy to deal with our traumas. And listen, traumatized Allie was not a fun time. So, pre-therapy Allie was not a fun time. So I, get it. I wanted to blow everything up, too. But, so we make fun of it a little bit, but it's mostly because it's uncomfortable. Because it's a woman who's dealing with these traumatizing times and has no outlet with which to express that trauma. In a productive, healthy way. Yeah, there's no therapy, Aja. so she's just sort of left to suffer with what she's dealt with without any sort of reprieve. And nobody... And not only does she suffer this, she gets back to the Aes Sedai and they punish her for it. and call her an idiot.
They
and
say,
I thought
like, fuck your trauma,
largely basically. Victim blamed her for it.
Yeah.
Which I found to be really, really problematic.
Oh, there's so much stuff I want to talk about right
now. I know. I don't know if you guys know from Discord the Grey Warder, Morgan, and her podcast. She did an episode, I think it was like the first one, where she talks about trauma in the series. And I think it might be safe for you, Allie. I just need to check. But the title of the episode is There Are No Therapists in Ranland. And I think that's one of the things that people really do not take into account when we're talking about the series. And, you know, I'm not going to say that it's a lack of empathy, but I feel I have a very strong sense of empathy. And I really feel for these characters because a lot of their actions that we find disagreeable, I think the root of that is the amount of trauma that they've experienced in the first book alone, in the first couple of chapters alone, tons and tons and tons of trauma for these, small town farmers and whatever the hell Egwene was.
Mayor's daughter.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think that a lot of people don't give them the benefit of the doubt for a lot of these things, especially Rand. And I won't get into that too much, but I definitely want to talk about that when Allie gets a little further into the series. Because Rand, and we were talking a little bit earlier about, Jesus figures and these saviors of the world. And one of the things that I really love about this series is that the hero is really an anti-hero. He is going to destroy the world in order to save it. And that's such an interesting element in a series that I haven't really seen before. This, I'm going to save you, but first I'm going to destroy you. And the prophecies are very clear about the fact that Rand is really going to fuck up the world. And basically the world is ending, you know? So,
yeah.
Literally, I think that's
Armageddon.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember what we were just talking about. Sean Chan.
Sean Chan. Trauma.
Trauma. Can I jump in and just say I think that Jordan is so very, very good at writing trauma realistically.
Yes.
And there is a specific incidence of trauma that I can't talk about right now that involves ribbons and lace later on that I think is incredibly... Allie's glaring at me because she has no idea what the hell I'm talking about. That I think illustrates Jordan's innate understanding of feeling deeply, deeply wounded and powerless and afraid, but being unable to express it.
I think that a lot of that for Jordan stems from his time in the Vietnam War.
And I was just going to say that.
Yeah. That is why he's so good at writing trauma. And at the part of the series that I'm at, I see his experiences with war all the time. All the time. And I've been talking a lot about it on my podcast because that is such an, we criticize Robert Jordan about certain things, but Robert Jordan is a phenomenal writer.
Yeah.
There is so much about the series that is so real and hits so close to home for a lot of people. And I think that's why it has such a huge fandom. And, I've never been to war. I am not somebody who would ever be in a war. I'm very much a hippie, peace, love, dope. I feel it. I feel he is so good at communicating the trauma and the helplessness, like you were saying, and just the lack of humanity in war and the cruelty. And I think that's so interesting. And it really gives a lot of texture to the characters and the battles, and I'm trying to avoid spoilers here, but as we go forward, that's something that pops up a lot. So Allie, you have that to look forward to, because some of the most beautiful and sweeping and heart-wrenching parts of this series are exactly that, are Robert Jordan dealing with and processing what he experienced in the Vietnam War through these characters. And that personal, those personal moments like that are really something special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I mean, I read the Iceman story to Allie, and I know I sent it to you as well. And I think that that's really required reading for anything after book three.
I haven't read it yet because I forgot about it. What you said.
Yeah, it's somewhere on a Discord.
Okay.
Yeah, I think about that too a lot, and I'm glad you brought that up because I've been thinking about that a lot recently. How his, because I do find, as someone who's dealt with trauma myself, I do find Egwene's reactions, and as I make fun of her, it's largely because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I don't make fun of her. It's more the fact that she wants to explode everything that I find delightfully funny. But because I'm like, you know what, same.
Yeah.
I go, we're all trauma dumpsters really deep down. Am I right? But what I find so so true is that immediate, how immediate that trauma and fear comes to the surface.
Yeah.
In these, we talk about triggers a lot in the arts and our responsibility as creators, and how quickly like something innocuous can become so threatening and elicit those responses as if you were actually back in those situations. And I find that he captures that so well. And I think it's really interesting because as we talk about the fact that there's no therapy in Ranland and there's no therapy Aja, and we sort of make light of it, but, you know, it's true. What I find so tragic about the Vietnam War in general is that a lot of them came back with this extreme trauma.
Oh, absolutely.
And there was no therapy Aja for them either.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way that they were treated when they got back by the people in their own country who had sent them to war is so disgusting and appalling. Like, I could get on a soapbox.
And continue to be treated.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Because
how many of those vets are now homeless? You know?
Yeah. Many.
It's bullshit.
And a lot of that is due to the trauma they had that was never helped.
There's a wonderful play called Viet Gone.
Oh, yeah.
Which is written by...
Chinwen.
Chinwen, yeah.
I'm probably butchering the shit out of his name, and I apologize, but Chinwen, I believe, is how
it's pronounced. He's a Vietnamese-American, and he writes a love story about the Vietnam War.
Wow.
And it is... Because we all have our American perspectives on that conflict, and saying either, well, it was a horrible thing and we never should have gotten involved, or
it was our duty to fight communism.
You have. But the perspective that, and we've gone very far afield here, but the perspective that we lack is the perspective of the people who live and lived in Vietnam, who either were happy about this or were not. And I can't begin to put words to what this play, it's a funny fucking play is the best part. It's very entertaining, it's very fun, and it's incredibly poignant. And if you want deeper and wider thoughts and perception about that conflict, I can't recommend it enough.
But yeah, so I wanted to end on sort of, I'm glad we sort of ended on this note of trauma, because that's definitely an unfortunate, sometimes part of the female experience in the United States as it is right now.
Yes.
And I find it really fascinating that one of the realest depictions of what that feels like in one who's dealt with female-related trauma is described so accurately by... is sort of portrayed really accurately, I think, by Robert Jordan. Just those. And I can't speak for everyone, but in my experience, I really appreciated how that came into play without the female character experience sexual violence. Because I feel like a lot of the time in books, if you want some kind of character development to happen to your female characters, you will have them undergo some kind of sexual violence. Not to say that that won't eventually happen, because I don't know. But I appreciated that, you know, it wasn't merely for character development that she underwent a traumatizing experience, and that it was treated with respect and that it was accurate in my experience as to how that goes. And so anyway, I'm glad we ended on this note, even though it's kind of a heavy note.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a heavy topic.
Yeah, because
it's as is anything, it can be lighthearted and it can be incredibly serious.
Yeah, because I feel like there's so many times where I read about women undergoing trauma and I just ring so false a lot of the time because it's either heavy-handed to the point where I'm like, we get it, you know, and I hate to say that, but you know, it's, you know, people are people on top of their trauma.
Yeah.
You know, you don't immediately descend into a cyclone of
grief.
Like even the process of realizing that you're traumatized takes forever or you never recognize it. That I appreciate that she's still a person and not just a trauma.
Yeah.
So,
and I cool think, to me. I think that is something that is really important about Robert Jordan's characters, and why they ring so true is because he deals with these topics that are shared equally, these experiences and these elements of life that are shared with both male and female humans, you know, like trauma, like, I don't know, discrimination and things like that. And his characters, especially his female characters, aren't always as well developed as they could be, but it's something to say. And I think the reason why so many people connect to his characters is because male or female, we see a part of our own struggles in everyone.
I think that's a good note to leave it on. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
I think you hit the nail right on the head.
And I also feel like I could talk to you for like 100 years. Yeah. And
we have times on differences.
I'm a chatty Cathy. But I think we should absolutely do this again.
2.5 hours deep.
We have about 100 more topics that are just gender and sex related.
Honestly, we could have spent the whole fucking podcast talking about Nynaeve and Moiraine.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's enough there to do an entire everything.
Yeah. So let's keep the train going.
Thanks for letting us
if that's okay with you.
Oh, fuck yeah. This has been great. I feel like I don't really get to spend a lot of time on these bigger and broader topics because I'm really just in the foxhole of the series and just, you know, having all of this stuff kind of hit me and all of these predictions and very complicated plot lines. So I spend a lot of time talking about plot and character development, but I don't get to talk about gender and gay representation and racial representation and things like that really very often. I'll go into like a little bit of a conversation with myself about this kind of stuff, but I think it's really important, especially as a female, to have another female. Gus, I like you a whole lot, too.
Hey, it's good. I'm just here for the ride.
Yeah, to have another female to talk about this stuff, especially when we're talking about our personal struggles with accepting and loving other women, especially ones that are more successful than us. Those kinds of things are really important to talk about. So I think this was fantastic. I want to do this 1,000 more times.
Great.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, this is really
fun.
Yeah. I had a great time. Thank you guys so much for coming.
For those of you who have not heard of us before, if you want to know more about us, our podcast is called Wheel Takes. Again, it's spoiler free as far as Allie's read. And
spoilers are in the title. Like
yeah,
where we are
is
in the title.
And in the description. We're on Twitter at Wheel Takes Pod. We're on Instagram at Wheel Takes Podcast. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/wheeltakes. And we spend most of our Discord time in Leslie's Discord because it's really cool. And we would love to see you there if you want to hear more about us. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
See you guys. Bye. Thank you.